Welcome to another edition of Declare Your Independence. Me, Ernest Hancock, special guest Paul Rosenberg. Today is March 16th, Tuesday, 2021. The live show on LRN.fm is postponed due to the FBI. The FBI is raiding the studios and the local Bitcoin hangout there. They have been doing refurbishment on a location, a Bitcoin embassy, training people on stuff. And the FBI, I guess, they don't like it. They don't like it at all. And one of the things is I'm interested in, they also have gold leaf printed denominations and weights of gold that they've been pushing in New Hampshire also in trade. I wonder if that has something to do with it. It's going to definitely a bank thing. I guarantee you, no matter what they say it is, it always comes back to some kind of, you know, control of we rule you. Now, no person better to talk to about this kind of stuff than Paul Rosenberg. Freemansperspective.com. Freemansperspective.com. Now, he does a newsletter, Parallel Society, that's just chock full of wisdom and good stuff to know. And you should have read them all up to this point, because then you know what's going on. And if you don't, well, we're going to try and help you out a little bit. So we're going to go without commercial interruption. That's one of the benefits here. So I'm going to take care of that. Welcome to the show, Paul.
Oh, thanks for having me.
Okay, this is one thing. We started off in the beginning of this. You're talking about power, direct power, and appropriated power. And I think the distinction that you made is important. And I want you to share that with the audience, would you please?
Sure. There are essentially two real types of power in the world. One I call true or direct power, and the other is appropriated power. A farmer holds direct power. He or she produces things that people need, things that are necessary for human life. The carpenter, mechanic, electrician, the doctor, the trucker, all of these people and a zillion other kinds like them have direct power. They make the things that make life possible. Appropriated power, on the other hand, is power that is taken usually unwillingly, but sometimes willingly too, from those who produced it. The best example of it is government. Government has power, but it's not their own. It's derived. It's not primary. They take it away from other people. Again, sometimes unwillingly, in some cases, sadly, willingly. The example I like to use is look at it this way. What if, there's something like 10 million truckers in the United States. And these are people that are absolutely necessary. We don't have our stuff if they don't bring it to us. So what if these truck drivers decided that they were tired of being stripped by their money and insulted on top of it by the ruling class and said, you know what? Forget it. We don't need that much work. I don't care if I lose a couple routes. We're not going to make any more deliveries inside the Beltway. Washington, D.C., we're not going to deliver to you anymore. The true power of the truck drivers would be immediately obvious, because their power is actual. It's direct. If they don't deliver bread and toilet paper and gasoline and 10 million other things, Washington, D.C. shuts down. Now, they can, you know, they'll try to get a bunch of soldier boys to do the work, but you know, it's not that easy. You know, these truck drivers, people think driving a truck is easy. It's not so easy, especially to do it in an ongoing basis. It's not so simple. So Washington would be immediately exposed as a house built on sand, because the only power they've got is appropriated. The truck drivers have direct power. So I think that explains what I mean by it. And the whole system that we have is designed to take power away from the people that produce it and hand it to an overlord class who looks like their gods. So that's kind of what I was getting at.
Well, you know, one of the things that you went into was the court system and how, you know, power to get justice. And there's people, it's getting to the point where the system, the justice system is not, it hasn't been really about justice for a long time. It's more an insulation or a power protecting device, but you had access if you had money. And you have people that don't have money, don't have access to justice. There's a lot more people without a lot of money than there are people with a lot of money. And I'm wondering, this is one of the reasons why people revolt. And it's just a sense of justice. Let's talk about that a little bit. You know, where do you think this is going?
Well, you know, it's interesting. Some years ago, it was $50,000 was the hurdle. If somebody ripped you off and it was less than $50,000, you probably wasn't anything you could do because the cost of the lawsuit would eat up whatever you got. Now I bet you the figure is more like $100,000. So the low end is pretty much cut off. I mean, you can file, you know, some sort of direct sort of claim, you know, small claims court and stuff like that. It really isn't very likely. It doesn't work. There is no justice on the low end. If somebody owes you $1 million, sure, you can hire, you know, really good lawyers and get it done, as long as the other side isn't the government. And you can do it, but justice just isn't available anymore. That's a general statement. It's not fair. I have, as you know, I've worked for a lot of years as an expert witness in specific types of cases. So if you go to, you know, a dispute that's in the nature of several million dollars, it's not too bad in the United States most of the time. If you go to criminal stuff, forget it. It's you can just, oh, I could tell you stories all day. I mean, I knew the guys who used to be the fixers and, you know, who would fix lawsuits and pick which judge because they knew which one they could pay off and things like this. This goes on all the time. It's been going on for decades. It's been probably going on since the beginning because that's just human nature. There are a certain number of humans who will take advantage of whatever they can. And then there's others who are desperate enough and that the only way they can get anything fixed is to pay off the judge. And there are judges who are less than saints and less than the angels.
It's getting to the point. It's like congressmen. You got to be corrupt to even get there, you know? It's
pretty much.
It's like a minimum job requirement. You know, one thing.
You know, I'm sure that on some of the lower end civil courts, I think there are judges who aren't totally abominable, but they're also manipulable. So if Congressman XYZ comes to them and says, look, we got to get this. We need this one. You owe us a favor. You got to do this. They'll pretty much do it.
Yeah, no, I've had plenty of experiences. I can echo what you're saying. I don't think, I know I've been through it, but it's generally what they perceive to be the common good as they have defined it. And they're going to do mental gymnastics with the law to come up with whatever answer that they want, because that's the kind of philosophy and or people that they are. That's why they're there, is because they're.
That's why they took the job. Yes.
Yeah. It's why they wanted it. It's why they wanted them there. And it's why they're there. So that just,
yes.
You know, one thing you kind of had in passing here is you're segueing from one subject to another, and it just happened, you know, this one little bit. I don't know. It made more impact on me than probably you intended, but you're talking about different avenues of being able to find, you know, meaning in your life. And you said religion is broadly ridiculed. Fatherhood is the butt of 1,000 televised jokes. Motherhood is for second rate women, and traditional values are for deplorables. That right there, I'm just like, traditional values, they lumped you in. You're just a deplorable because you believe in that traditional, hell, you even have a value. I mean, you know, so I'm,
right.
I see that as, and you wrote, this then is a revolutionary situation. It's just waiting to find direction. The opportunity that stands before us is to provide it with productive directions. So this is where I'm like, where you focus your time and why this is a thing. And I'm going, okay, deplorable. What do you think they meant by that? And, you know, where are the deplorables congregating, if they even should, you know? What do you think deplorable? Why that? Why were they focusing on values and so on? What do you think?
Well, there's been an effort on part of the intellectual left, which is almost all of the intellectual dumb these days. They began, it's a long story. They began in earnest in, let's say, 1967 to take what they call the long march through the institutions. And what they became, and this goes back to the second half of the Enlightenment leading into the French Revolution, these people began to learn how to tear things down, how to criticize, how to deconstruct, how to reject and make look ridiculous everything. They are not, so everyone who goes through, or everyone, I shouldn't say everyone, most everyone who goes through the proper intellectual, social sort of programs at colleges, they are equipped to tear things down. They are not equipped to build. And what they have done is they have gone to tear down traditional civilization, believing themselves to be righteous to so do. I mean, you look at the name of their things, deconstructionism, critical theory. You know, all they're about is tearing things down. To build is a completely different thing. To build is slow, it's hard, sometimes it's thankless. But that's the only thing that actually makes life livable upon the planet. But these people have been trying to deconstruct and to tear things down, and traditional culture has been their main target. If you notice, almost everything that they do has some angle in it that they're tearing apart something that's traditional. They've been going after religion forever, unfairly, I might add. They've been going, I mean, look at fatherhood. You know, from Homer Simpson on down the line, fatherhood is just the butt of jokes on TV. Where is there a noble, honest, reliable, strong father on television? There must be one somewhere, but not a whole lot of them.
And Ted Bundy.
Ted Bundy. There you go.
You know, I've been interviewing on this subject in the past, and about the mid-2000s, a gentleman named Glenn Sachs. And Glenn Sachs was, his whole thing was to point out every commercial, every Super Bowl ad, everything, to where they diminished the role of the father. They made fun of the father. The father's the bad guy. On and on and on and on. And the smart woman comes, here she comes to save the day, Captain Marvel. And I'm going, this, and I didn't really take it, that it didn't impact me as much initially, but then it became a wave. It was everywhere all the time. I guess it made me aware of it. And this is what the social justice warriors are trying to do. They're trying to make general public opinion about something, but they're kind of falling flat because what they're concerned about aren't the real things to be concerned about. The real things to be concerned about is the diminishing of work, of effort, of skill, of talent, of you know, being a father, of going to church, of, you know, having some value, aside, anything. What it seems to me is that there is a diversity in our culture with what color hair you wear, or how many people you love, or which ones, or what I don't care. But the fact that there is a traditional normal, or that there is a family unit is the best, you know, production of future adults, or anything like that, that shows that they're a deviation from the majority or whatever, is offensive to them. And they're going, there is no normal. Our normal is whatever I want to do, and normal, and, oh, by the way, make you pay for it. So I'm I can see that it is an attack on what they perceive as a club that they're not in. And I, the only club I want to be in is the freedom to have my own club, you know? And
right,
kind of segues into, you were talking about the cyberpunks of years past that were using technology to level the playing field, to make, you know, to where the ability to fish or to do anything by someone was the future. And the cyberpunks now that are looking to technology have money. You know, this didn't happen before. All of a sudden now with cryptocurrencies and, you know, high tech solution and coding, and all of a sudden now the cyberpunks that wanted to have a more equitable world with effort and technology now have the means. That puts them in direct threat with something or somebody. Describe that struggle for me.
Yeah. You know, cyberpunks were outsiders. These were, you know, we were crazy people. We were, you know, idiot guys, smart but stupid. You know, there's a lot of these guys were really bright, so you couldn't really call them dumb. That didn't fly because they, you know, they could quote to you, you know, Fermat's theorem and tell you how superconductivity works at low temperatures, you know. But they called them idiots and you know, geeks and everything else. So these were people who were very much outsiders. And all of a sudden now, these people are the next generations of these people. And any serious Bitcoiner, I think, qualifies as a cypherpunk. You know, maybe not the newbies who are coming in just because, you know, the number goes up and they want to get in on it, which is not irrational. But, you know, once they're around for a few years and really understand that decentralization is a new model of life on the planet and that it can actually work, then they're cyberpunks. But you don't have outsiders like that who have means. It rarely happens. And now, you know, Bitcoin is, you know, $50,000, $60,000 per coin. There is a whole large group of people who are committed outsiders who have been willing to take the heat and to be ridiculed, to be called names, and to stand and to stay with it because they believed in it, even when things were going wrong. Now, all of a sudden, these people have money. This is an interesting moment. The only real good example, historical analogy I have for it was William Penn. You know, this, I'll make it short. He was born to an extremely wealthy family and then became a Quaker, which back in the day was a very nonconformist, dangerous thing to be. You could go to jail, you could be beaten in the streets and so on. But since his family was so wealthy and he eventually became the senior man of the family, the king owed him a lot of money. And he traded it for 45,000 square miles in Pennsylvania and areas near there. And I don't know how many thousands, tens of thousands, I'm not sure, persecuted minorities came to there, usually religious persecutions. England, France, Holland, Germany, Sweden, all sorts of them came and they took refuge and built something new and better in the new world because of a nonconformist with means. And we're looking now at a bunch of people who are confirmed nonconformists who had to prove their worth, and now they've got money. And this is a great moment for us. There's a lot of things we can do. Sure, we'll want to take care of our own families and all that, but at $50,000 and $60,000 Bitcoin, a lot of these people have more than they need for that. And they can begin doing things with the money and start to build things that we really need and not try to do it through the system of appropriated power, but to do it with direct power.
I'm looking, you know, the more I look at land or different places to go and so on, Don and I, you know, by the end of the year, we're going to be starting building our own Lone Prairie. And a lot of people are interested. I'm like, you know, it keeps coming down to this future that we hope to actually physically build for ourselves, not a, you know, metaphorical or a, you know, on a piece of paper or a philosophy written down and we all pledge allegiance to, I mean, actually living it. That appeals to a lot of people, but I always ask the same three questions. What do I have to do? What am I prevented from doing? And what's your conflict resolution? You know, that's all I really want to know. And to do this, I'm thinking when, you know, what shall we build? This is always comes down to a food thing. I may have my Arduino running my step motor of opening and closing and feeding chickens and automatic watering of I'm sitting on the back porch getting high and watching, you know, my fields grow. You know, it's still going to come down to, you know, the philosophy of what I can, can't do, and how am I going to get along with my neighbors. And it would seem as you look over history that this has always been the what has been argued. It's always how are we going to, you know, settle disputes? How are we going to govern ourselves? How are we going to, and then who's going to have the shiny badge of telling me if there is even one? So when we get to what shall we build, now that we have people with resources, they're looking at a lot of different things. I'm like, yeah, just give me my pirate ship and we're done, you know. But it's I'm wanting to get how you think this is going to manifest itself, because to me, if you look throughout history and what's going to happen and happening now, it always comes down to a food thing. I mean, do you think it's going to get that basic?
Well, good question, Ernie. What I think we're looking at here is an analog to what are poorly called dark ages. What we usually call dark ages, and there's two big ones that people talk about. First, the European dark ages, and then the dark age of the Greeks, which went from like 1200 to 800 BC. What these are is where power breaks down and devolves back down to the family level. And you find out that as power, the danger is when power exists. When power breaks down, things generally do all right. A lot of the crops, the crop yields, the abundance of food actually rose in the European Dark Ages. In a lot of places, there was more food, not less, because people were less restrained in how they did it. Before then, it was monopolized by these giant latifundia, they called them. And it was a very inefficient sort of operation, whereas you have a family producing, they tend to be a lot better at it. They cooperate, they talk to their neighbors, they, you know, blah, blah, blah. The crops actually, the abundance went up. So power is definitely cracking in the West. You would not have something like the Great Reset being proposed very seriously for Europe and the United States if they didn't know that their system was unstable. Now, this is not you or me or some other guy trying to read tea leaves and saying what's going to happen. These are the people who are running this thing telling us that their system needs to be revised because it's not working, or it's in danger of not working, and any financial person can tell why. So we are going back down towards that sort of breakdown. God help us, I want it to be fast and nonviolent. But we're going towards that. So what I want to build is very personal level stuff, things that we can build that don't require power. Now, it's still going to be really dicey for a while because we got these crazy states who demand that everybody, you know, that the statement of a government to everybody, and this is made millions and millions of times per day, but no one really wants to say exactly what it is. It is, do what we say or we will hurt you. And that's the modus operandi of government. And that is a problem. And it's going to remain a problem so long as people think that there's any legitimacy to this operation at all. Now, once it begins to crack, once things get worse, which, well, look at the last year, things have gotten worse, then it becomes more obvious and people begin pulling away, and then they cloister in their families and they begin to tend to their family. Maybe the kids move back, maybe they buy a bigger piece of land and start building two or three houses or a big house where more people live, more generations are together, because there's no one else you can rely on. The county is going to drive you into the ground. The city is going to take everything you have. The unions that run the city, if we're to be honest, are going to just keep grabbing and taking until everyone is dead or no one is left. That's all that they're going to do. They are rapacious beasts. Now, that's not entirely fair, but you get the idea.
No, they get all the evidence for that.
Yeah, I mean, there's plenty of it. You know, are there a rare exception? I'm sure. You know, thank God for that. But they're just going to keep taking because they don't have anything else. They don't produce. All they do is take. And when they haven't got enough, they have to take more. And since they're immensely inefficient, since all they got is take more, you know, make people, make the suckers think that they need us. Make everybody believe that they will die without us telling them how to do things and arranging their lives for them. You know, make them buy into our thing through fear, through whatever else, and to keep them coming. But it's all appropriated power. It's all tricking people into servicing them.
Well, this when really becomes apparent over last year. We see with the mass and the lockdowns and the forced vaccinations, or forced vaccinations be a common. And that is one of the things that really Donna and I have been focused on this last year is, getting people's minds wrapped around this only stops when you stop complying. And
yeah,
compliance of lining up and got a big line of sticking your arm out the car window for just to get a shot. This is so dangerous on so many levels, and I don't see America as it is now, or nostalgically we kind of conjured it up in this ghost of promise of whatever's in our heads surviving. And it's going to be, you know, eventually for the better. In the end, freedom always wins. It just gets really messy first. But I'm seeing, and it doesn't even need to be a majority, but it needs to be a significant minority that just goes, no. And those people that would say no have been the ones that have been targeted. They are the business owners, the entrepreneurs, the alternative currency people, the growing their own food thing, not looking for a permission slip or permit. You know, this is, and technology is getting to where, you know, it's so enslaving. And you talked about freeing our phones. You know, spend some time on that. What are you talking about? What needs to happen?
Yeah, smartphones are not inherently evil, but there are no non-evil smartphones in circulation. So you want to have a phone that does X, Y, Z? Well, that's fine. Nothing wrong with it. It's just another tool. Unfortunately, I think every smartphone that's being sold is wired for mass surveillance.
Yeah.
It is wired for surveillance capitalism, which is get the free account. Look, little boy, I have candy in the car. that's what it is. Anytime you got a free account, they are abusing you 10 times more than you think they are.
Yeah.
I don't have a smartphone. I have a flip phone, which is I really didn't even want that. So these phones track everything. Any app you have that is free. I mean, how are they paying their engineers? How are they buying all those servers? How are they providing this service? You think it's easy to run a service? It's not. You got to pay a lot of people and a lot of professionals. It's a lot of money. So what they're doing is they're stealing your life. And if we want to be accurate, but even though it sounds flamboyant, they're stealing your soul. It's way, literally, way worse than people think it is. So we need non-evil smartphones, and they can definitely be built. It's not a problem. I don't know, you know, how many people can be able to pull themselves out of the matrix, because once you get on Twitter, once you get on Facebook, once you're doing all this stuff all the time, you got to understand these companies bring in hundreds of billions of dollars per year, and they don't do it with little cheesy ads for ski boots. They do it by being able to guide your thinking. Yep. Pull up YouTube on your phone, and then have your friend across the street pull up YouTube on his or her phone. You'll find out you're getting different views. You're getting a different screen. You're getting a custom environment. And once you begin to interact with that environment, they learn what triggers you.
You get different search results too. And this,
yes, you do.
I'm wondering if information is being stripped from the internet or stripped from my search of it. You know, it's getting worse. You know, I do this.
It's been stripped from everywhere, Ernie. They buy lists of everything. And they cross-link it, and the machines they have now, you know, they used to say, well, you know, they can't drink from a fire hose. No, now they can. They have a technology called big data that loves the fire hose. Do you have two or three fire hoses, please? Please turn them on.
Right.
Okay. It loves it. And things so we've been, we need non-evil smartphones.
Well, we've been searching, and there's, have you heard of Clearphone?
I heard of a couple. The one that was interesting to me was from Purism people. I don't know if they've the Librem. I don't know if they've got it out yet. But
yeah, no, I've been following that, and that's kind of, you know, dead. Whenever you get something that's really interesting, you know, it kind of goes away. They get infiltrated. Somebody gets arrested, or just doesn't get developed, and then maybe if you're lucky, a year or two later, and all of a sudden, poof, it's there. You buy it at the convenience store. But
several issues back, I explained how this thing could be built. You know, where you could take it to China and build this, and you know, and you could get the first few runs before they shut it down. And after that, we could build kits and make these things. And once these things spread, and it's not hard to build anymore. It won't be the sexiest, you know, iPhone 12 with, you know, every widget in it. It won't be that. But it'll be a smartphone that works, and you can, you know, have passive GPS rather than active GPS in it. So you're not tracked, but you can still find out where you are down to the meter. It doesn't have to be evil, but they are. So we need to build a non-evil smartphone.
I encourage you to check. One of the things I wanted to talk to you about, privately, if not, we can just do it now. Do a search on Clear United or Clear Phone YouTube, and it'll have a series of short 1-minute videos. This is going to launch in the next month. And looking at it, and what they've done is they make an account that you have a digital ID that's not tied to anything. No ID, no social security number, none of that. And what Clearphone does is a contract with the providers. And I think they're T-Mobile or something. But when T-Mobile logs in, your number is just a digital ID. It doesn't go to you. Now, of course, sooner or later, they're going to find who you are if they really want to. And the other thing is that while they have their own garden of their Play Store and clones of everything, you are allowed to download your Twitter and your this and that. You might as well just be, you know, on their system anyway, you know. But
right,
it gives you the option. We'll see. The 26th, I interview the head IT guy, so I get to ask all my Paul Rosenberg questions. And what would those questions be? I should go, okay, so you say you're secret and separate and kind of, yeah, just how much? I mean, what am I looking for?
I don't want to slam these guys because they're trying to do something, and I'm certain their phones will be less bad than anything else. But once you allow people to put their app, their free apps on your phone, you're giving them, what's to stop them from drilling into your phone? You're giving them access to the inside of your phone.
I agree. I totally agree. Push the button here.
Yeah, right. And they're giving them access to your phone. And so I think to have a really good smartphone, it's just going to have to start with people who care and people who are willing to say, no, I don't have the app that allows me to have Chinese food delivered to me at 3 a.m. Anywhere in the world. Sorry.
Yeah, I'm not using that phone for Uber.
Right. Right. Exactly. You and I remember life in the 60s and 70s and 80s. And, we survived quite well. You know, people fell in love and got married and had children. And we had refrigerators and cars and houses,
Yeah, we knew what they smelled like before we got married.
Yeah. You don't have to automate every single thing. It's not necessary and it's not desirable because the cost is too great. They got people into this routine where they tied their self-worth, their self-image to their phone. And if they don't have the cool phone, then they really don't exist. And I can understand because they've removed every other form of meaning. That was the crazy thing with the masks over this past year. This was a way for a lot of people who had really no meaning in their life to find some moral clarity. Good people wear masks. I'm a good person.
That has been, so, Donna and I have not complied. We just don't worry about it. I don't make a big deal out of it. They don't want us to turn, going in without a mask and we just leave. We did that we were in Texas. We went to a Mexican restaurant and this was just a day or two after they lifted the mandate by the state. And we go into right. the restaurant and they go, oh, you have to wear a mask to go. And we go, okay. And we just turned around, walked out and they chased us out the door. Wait. No, it's
okay. Good.
It's okay. Come on in. Ven aquí, senor. So, when it comes down to economics, that's the first time that I've had somebody chase me down and brought me back in the store. We're ready to walk out. That's a good sign.
A good sign. So, and I go, I have businesses that I know here. And the people who run the businesses, they really, they have a balancing act versus what they really want and how many complaints they get. Cause there are a lot of, as they're calling them now, Karens, sorry, people who are really named Karen, apologies, who just, they live to complain and they live to enforce their will on others without having to be, the big enforcer.
I remember somebody they were calling in reporting this kind of stuff and it generated a list. I think it was Colorado. And somebody published that public information of the list of the Karens. Well, of course,
really?
And I'm going, well, that's awesome. That's how, if you're so proud, man, get your name be on top of the list, And this is not where this is going to go. They're going to keep them secret. You always got the code enforcer coming in. Oh, we have an anonymous tip. I'm like, yeah, we protect, our snitches get protected, you get screwed, but you're not allowed to face your accuser. So I'm wondering where this is going. You've written a lot about this. You can see, what's going to happen or you anticipate what may happen. Describe how you're seeing this evolve over the next year.
What I'm seeing going on now is a general backing off of lockdown and the whole thing. I know that the businesses that I deal with would like to get the hell away from it. And I know that a lot of people, a lot of individuals, even who work in businesses where they have, you must wear a mask, they all know that it's ridiculous. They know, that it's just to keep people happy. One of them flatly told me, said, you know, look, it's a means of control. And I said, well, I don't disagree with you. But then again, we have this class of superfluous intellectuals who found power on Facebook and Twitter, become kind of mobs who are getting people canceled. I mean, there are people who've told me that don't tell anybody I said that because I have a mortgage I got to pay. Now that's tyranny. That is flat out tyranny. Somebody who has an honest opinion that even if it's wrong, I don't care if it's wrong, they have an honest opinion and they can't say it because they're afraid they'll lose their job because of, you know, pseudo intellectuals who are looking for somebody to deconstruct, because that's all that they know how to do is to tear apart. They don't know how to build. That's a problem. But I think those people will do as they usually do and shoot themselves in the foot and start eating each other rather than everyone else.
Yeah.
So I think this is going to go away. It's a sad truth that there are a lot of people who've been, you know, sitting and sucking up CNN every day and who don't want lockdown to go away. They can get the vaccine. They can wear 3 masks. They can do everything else, and they will not want lockdown to go away.
Basic stimulus.
Yeah, and it's not even an intellectual thing. It's an emotional thing. They find safety and, again, meaning, because I'm a good person, I wear a mask. Well, it's the first time, because the system has stolen all personal initiative and personal meaning from it, these people. That's all they got. But they've got something that they can hold on to because I'm a good person and I wear a mask. And that's not going to go away as fast as we like, or at least not as completely as we like. But I think the majority are people who just want to get the hell past this thing.
You know, last week, Donna and I spent the week at a festival, Float Fest. Float Fest was put on as part of, it started, you know, like a lot of the festivals are Freedom Summits that you've spoken at and so on. And then it, you know, went out of the country, Anarchapoco, you know, that was popular. Then you can't travel or get there or get back, you know. So they had simulcast that went to a lot of different gatherings that were around. And one of those was Float Fest, and they had, you know, several speeches piped in, but generally it was their own speakers and everybody just camping. Well, it started with, you had Anarchazona, Anarchavegas, Anarchadelphia in Philadelphia. And the one that was to be this last spring in Las Vegas was canceled because, of course, they canceled all gatherings and you got to have a mask and you got to. And they just said, nah, I think we'll decline. Well, then, of course, in August, we had the Jackalope Freedom Festival that we've done for a decade up in the mountains here in Arizona, and no one's in charge, so everybody is. Well, you just do it. There's no organization. There's no anything. I'm in the forest, and I can camp for 14 days, so I'm camping, you know, and what are you going to do about it? Well, that nobody being able to cancel it, and then you're waiting on the government. You're almost going, all right, go ahead and close down the forest. We'll see how that goes over. That's something we need to know, you know. So you don't even get your 14 days. So I'm seeing how that infected a lot. We have Midfest and Fork Fest and Float Fest. And a lot of these different festivals that are coming up, already started and are going through this year, are not the ones that you can easily just shut down. There's no one to call. There's no place. There's no or it's private property. So then you get on private property. Then you got, you know, whatever issues you got to deal with there. But it was a couple hundred acre farm and dry camping. I mean, it was windy. But, you know, everybody, you take care of your own business. It was awesome. So I see these happening, these gatherings. And the biggest discussion is just, where do you breathe? I mean, where am I able to just sit in my rocking chair and be left alone, that I can produce my own food? I have relationships. In New England, there's a lot of the guys there, especially in New Hampshire, that saw this coming and they started purchasing livestock. They got a bunch of cows, they got a bunch of pigs. Well, all of a sudden these little piglets are now 300-400 pound pigs, you know, and they're eating fine. They're good. Well, they use them for currency, you know, cash, silver, and crypto. Well, here comes the man. You know, they're going, oh, no, I'm, man, you found an out. You're not allowed, you know. So we're going to walk this through. And I think the people with resources, because of technology, because of crypto, because they understand what they're looking for and the importance of community, and then the technology to out, you know, we have something that we're working on, Scuttlebutt, which outs the sociopaths. The biggest problem in any community is their success brings in these very people that will exploit you. And whenever you have, you know, somebody goes, oh, we were on the hippie commune and great and wonderful, and there's a libertarian oasis of heaven on earth, and kind of go, well, how come you're not there? Well, there was this one guy. Well, there's always
yes.
one guy or gal. That's the reason why they justify having governments. And I'm going, you know, how do you out that person early on in, you know, like your reputation precedes you app, and everybody gets Yelped and eBayed ranking. And I'm like, cool. You know, because this is what is the infiltration of any successful effort against they, them, those has always been the nose of the camel in the tent that come in and say, well, you need to have fill in the blank to rule you, or this guy will take over. And then, of course, whatever you create to protect against them, that's what they take over, you know? So the future is going to be organized. What are some of the traits or the main tenets that you think will be incorporated into the Liberty community for it to be sustainable?
Well, I think a lot of it will come back to the family level, because there's inherent trust. I mean, even your idiot brother-in-law will probably come through if you're in deep trouble. So it'll come back to the family level in a lot of cases. And we're just going to have to start taking matters into our own hands. I was on a cypherpunk project 20 years ago, more than 20 years ago. And we were doing great and things were going really, but we had, like you say, one guy. And he was like, no, we have to make this into a cyber state with a cyber constitution because of, you know, and on and on and on. And because of some various intricacies, it fell to me to oppose this guy and to expose him. And it's a hard job. It's a lot of work. These guys don't give up very easily. Now, eventually he lost and then shot himself in the foot and did really stupid things and totally lost. But it takes, you know, hard-nosed effort sometimes and sucks, but we're just going to have to do it. And we're going to have to persist in that sort of thing. And really what the thing that makes us successful is that we are decentralized. And that is, I got my own idea how things should be done. And I got my own little project, whatever. I'm going to produce this or do this or, you know, like I'm doing with Crypto Hippie or something. And we're going to do this. But you know what? The guy across the street, he has a different idea. And he's going to go at it a different way. You know what? That's cool. Because all of a sudden, they don't have two or three opponents that they have to pay attention to. They've got hundreds. And they're coming from every angle. And they don't know what to do. And they may unfortunately get one or two and shut them down. But they're while they're getting the one or two, there's 10 others that are taking root behind them. So the more efforts we have, the more variations we've got, the better we are. And so individuality saves us in this. It's going to be messy. It's going to be ugly. There's going to be 5,000 different ways to try it. Some of them will be great. Some of them will be stupid. Some of them will be good ideas, but are doomed to failure, whatever. We just need to keep working and doing things to increase freedom, to increase our ability to act as sane individuals.
In your newsletter that you do, freemansperspective.com, Parallel Society, you know, it's we have it in our power to begin the world over again. How big of influence, you know, are you willing to have on people to actually, you know, do something you want to do empowering them to do something they want to do, you know, or, you know, you got the secret Paul Rosenberg army of bullshit, or, I mean, you know, what do you think the future is for you?
My job is to just keep putting out the best ideas, the best understandings of things I can. My job is not to be a leader or a man who's guiding, who's showing the way to the thousands who will follow. That's not my job. My job is to plant good seeds. It's to explain things. It's to make life sensible and the way forward sensible. What everybody does with that is their business, and it should be. We don't, following the leader is an error. It's a mistake.
Right.
We have to be able to stand alone, to make our own decisions, to make our own plans. Sure, we cooperate. That's great. But we don't need a leader, because once you begin to follow a leader, oh, he's the great one. Have you heard what the new message is from, Saint, whatever his name is. Once you begin to do that, you begin to burn your own creativity. You begin to ignore it. You begin to become a follower, and that is precisely the thing we may not do. So I just want to put the good things into the world.
The one thing that I'm really glad to see, and there's more of it, is these round tables. And they're usually homesteading round tables or small farmer round tables or aquaponic round tables, or it's just a week-long festival of guys coming in and sharing what they learned that year or what they implemented to somebody else's idea the year before, or the coding or tech or Arduino or step motor or something that made their life easier. And I'm looking for more of them. And there's been a lot. And we want, Donna and I want to, frequent a lot of these are coming up. And when we go to them, I get more from them, from just audience. I mean, people that I know or friends that go, man, you need to look at this new whiz bang and this guy on this channel. And then you start to see any philosophy that has to do with why you're doing it, and you're canceled, And they don't mind you going out there and telling them about how your tiny house is. But if you're building a tiny house and telling, the man to suck it, and you're doing it because you don't want any permits, and you're shadow banned,
So, well, they're afraid.
Yeah, afraid of. What do you, let's define that before we go.
Sure. People have been trained overtly and covertly that if you leave the prescribed path, you will be hammered. And people are afraid. They're afraid to be their own selves. So what they're doing in a lot of these cases, at least, not all, I'm sure, is they're going to the edge, but they're afraid to go over the edge because they're afraid they're going to get hammered. One of the funny things you find out about the old days, in the real early Christian days, heresy was not just about maintaining beliefs. It was about preventing persecutions, because persecutions usually began when somebody was a little bit too goofy and went too far and insulted people on purpose. And that's when they had trouble. So they began to call heresy, in a large part anyway, to prevent people from going too far. And these people are afraid that you're going to go too far and you're going to say something to tick off power, and they're going to get hammered.
Heresy. All right. I think a little bit more heresy is required. This is, it's been Paul Rosenberg, freemansperspective.com. His newsletter, Parallel Society, awesome. And he's got a lot of influence out there. And I'm telling you, this is where we need to be listening to people like Paul that understand the power of principled individual that have the tech and the concept of making life better. And now those people have the resources to do it. Then what? You get raided by the FBI. That's what happens. But all it just means we're winning a little bit more. Paul, thanks for coming on, man. I appreciate everything you're doing, and you have big influence on me.
Oh, well, thank you, Ernie. You're kind.
Bye-bye, sir.
Bye-bye, Ernie. Take care.